Hi, everybody. You are watching Lips from the band Anvil on Signals from Mars.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 386 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And as you might surmise, this episode features an interview with Lips, the lead singer of Anvil. Had a nice 40-something minute chat with him, and we'll be getting into that roughly around the 5-minute mark. Here we go.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
So it has been some time since I've actually done an interview on the show. I have been in a fairly good rhythm speaking to patrons and other people that are sure a lot less known, but similar to something that we're going to talk about during this episode between Lips and myself. Success. How do you measure success? I love doing these shows where I talk to other people and yeah, maybe the vast majority of the podcasting universe doesn't care about these conversations. But a lot of what attracts me to music and has always done so is that dialogue back and forth with other people discussing different topics, different bands, different things in the news regarding music and whatnot. And I think it's fun and it's therapeutic and it's awesome, which is why I do the podcast. My goal a little while back was to try to do interviews here and there because it also becomes kind of a, I don't want to interview people just for the sake of interviewing them. I've always wanted to try and interview people that I'm interested in, that I enjoy their music. They can be newer bands, they can be bands like Anvil that have been around for some time. But I don't like the generic softball interview where you can tell the interviewer just doesn't care about the band. And ultimately, It's all the, hey, so where are you going next on tour? And so do you remember recording Metal on Metal? Do you remember, where it's all blast from the past and nostalgia stuff? There's a lot of things that you can talk about. And listen, if that's what you like doing on your show, more power to you. But I don't know, man. I like talking about current stuff. I like mixing in other stuff. It's just whatever. You do you, and this is what I like doing. And I like talking about music. So it's why this show is in the direction that it's in now. That's not to say that I won't be including more interviews, which is what I do want to do. So hopefully this will be kind of the first step in incorporating or bringing back more interview-based shows. In any event, I do want to thank you for listening to this episode. I do want to thank you if you are one of my patrons. I do want to thank you for sharing this episode. So if it's the first time that you're here and you're listening to this show because Lips is on the show, go to signalsfrommars.com. It's your one-stop shopping place to pick up merch, where you can go to our Patreon, subscribe, where you could find all the various places where you can subscribe to the show on the internet, where you can watch the live stream, the video portion, where you can vote on the shows, where we rank different albums and genres and so on and so forth. Again, thanks for being here. There's a million and one other things you can be checking out now, and it really means a lot that you're here. Enjoy the episode and help spread the word. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Signals from Mars. I am pleased to announce Lips from Anvil joining me today. Sir, how are you?
I'm okay.
Awesome. So when I was given the opportunity to interview you, the first thing that came to mind for some reason was the documentary and seeing a Maple Leafs beanie featured prevalently at the beginning. So my first question to you is, out of all the Toronto sports franchises, which is the next one that's going to bring sports glory back to Toronto?
Obviously, the Maple Leafs, if it ever happens. It's only been since 1967.
You've got faith in them being able to turn it around and finally get out of the first round.
No, that's why you call them the mainly griefs.
See, growing up in the New York area as a Rangers fan, I've never heard that. It's usually things like that towards, you know, Islanders or Flyers or stuff like that for when I was growing up, at least the rivals at that time. So that brings a smile to my face to know that there are other nicknames for other teams. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Speaking of the documentary, it came out 16 years ago at this point. How important do you feel that was for the band's legacy?
It righted all the wrongs.
Okay.
It righted all the wrongs, man. All the misfortune, and without the misfortune, there wouldn't have been any movie. So what the hell? Perfect ending to all the bullshit. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like a balancing.
Yeah, it's totally balancing. And you know what's wonderful about all of it and the real truth. Although it comes across, you want that, you know, you people think that, you know, we want that stardom like a Metallica or one of the big bands. That's not the case. What we wanted was to make a living from our fucking band.
Right.
Simple as that. It's really is just as simple as that, because 99% of bands don't make a living.
Right.
Everybody wants that. But meanwhile, no one is making that because there's incredible competition. Musicians undersell themselves so bad to get a gig. Mm-hmm. So why are they going to pay, you know, $1,000 when they can pay $500? So now you got bands playing for $500. And then if that's no good, hey, now you're paying to play. Mm-hmm. And that's going on.
Yeah.
Go get a gig at the Whiskey, and you're going to pay them to play.
Yeah.
That's what it's turned into, right?
That's crazy.
Yeah, but that's the realities of the business. That's, you know, but that's what it's up against. After the movie, I haven't stopped working. I haven't done a delivery for Choice Children's Catering in 17 years. You know, I'm making a full-on living. No, I'm not a millionaire, and that's not what I really wanted. I just wanted to make a living like everybody else, right? Well, it's like it's a dream come true, it did. You worked hard enough, and the other thing is, got everything I ever wanted or ever strived for. I attained it. I didn't want the mass stardom or the number one hit or the, you know, the top 10 on Billboard. That's not what metal is. It's not what metal is. And the bands that do make it in there, they're there for a blink. And then they're pigeonholed and called and looked at from whatever that hit was forever. Mm-hmm. And they can never do better or never do worse. That's what they are. And they can go on forever just being the same and never, you know, it's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to put out music for my entire life. Rob and I wanted to do this for a lifetime and not sell out, not be commercial, not be, you know, turn into what everything else, watered down garbage. No, that's not what we want to do. Stay consistent, stay true to our fans, all those things. And here we are 20 albums later. Hey, man, how come they're not big stars? How about we don't want to be? How about you? It takes so much synchronicity to actually get anywhere in this business. And what do I mean by that? Finding the right manager, finding the right booking agent, putting out the right album at the right time, being with the right label. Then the people, it's down to the people, getting that tour, getting the big tour, the opening slot. Do you know what it's like? Look at, here we are 45 years into this business, okay? And I haven't done shows in big arenas in the United States other than the five ACE or four AC/DC shows. Other than that, doing four shows with Aerosmith in 1982. If you don't get on a real tour and not do five shows, what I'm talking about is do, you know, 30 shows with Kiss, 30 shows with Iron Maiden, you know, 30 shows with, yeah, until you do those things, you sit and you play clubs. That's what you do, because that's what the alternative is. And there is no alternative, because you're not going to get those positions on those tours unless you've got a horseshoe up your ass big time. In other words, you got a big selling record right out the gate and you're a commodity worth hiring. Their management's not going to look at you unless you can bring 10,000 people to that show,
right?
Okay, and that's the way it works. And if you can't bring 10,000 people to the show, we want what 10,000 people would be paying to be at the show. So you're buying on. Okay, so all these contingencies, until those contingencies are met and dealt with, you don't make it.
Right.
You just don't make it. And you never will. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of what it is. And if you don't believe me, go try it. Knock yourself out, man.
Yeah, and it's interesting. A lot of the topics you just touched upon is spread out across 14 years of me podcasting. There are a lot of topics that we've touched on over the years, like bands having that one single and always having a B version, a C version, a D version of that single on every album, a watered down version of that. To just recently, we were talking about economics in music in 2024. Outside of the metal realm, we've seen big rock acts, big pop acts that have had to cancel huge tours because they're not selling tickets. And a lot of what you're saying, you know, for me as an ignorant podcaster, I thought, well, who's the manager there that's saying, let's go play these stadiums, when maybe the reality is, maybe we can't play those stadiums. Maybe we can only play a package tour on an amphitheater run. Maybe we can only play 2,000 seat venues because we can't sell out you know, the Maple Leaf Garden or whatever. You know, we can, but we're going to have to rope off 80% of the place and we're going to have to pay for that. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because it was one of the points that I did want to touch upon, because the documentary does give you that kind of feel that, hey, you may not be in a place where you want to be, but reality may be something different. As you're saying,
no. Hey, listen, man, it's ridiculous. Hey, they're not, you know, the people calling out saying we're not successful. You go and record 12 albums.
Yeah.
Before you say that I'm not successful, you go record 12 albums and live in obscurity and deal with having to have a day job and then finally get a movie out. And then you tell me what's going on, what's successful and not. Being successful in the music industry is writing a bunch of songs, recording them with the guys that you love like brothers, and make the best piece of music, best pieces of music that you possibly can, and get it out in the public domain. That's being successful. How many records you sell is not even relevant, because at the end of the day, it's about how many songs did you write? How much did you contribute? What did you bring to this world? That's what living is about, is what you bring to the world, not what the world gives to you. If you have to, if you have to judge everything on what the world gives to you, you got fuck all.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, even if you got no one that loves you, you got fuck all.
Right.
And if you haven't got someone to love, you got fuck all. You know what I mean? There's a lot more. Money is only one small aspect of our human existence. And until you put it in perspective of what it actually is, it's a means to an end. It's to feed yourself. That's what you're using to make money. So once you've fed yourself, everything more is abundance. What do you, if you're a minimalist, you feed yourself and you go out and you enjoy your fucking life and get as much and put as much of yourself out there as you can to actually be responsible for all kinds of as much as possible and get as much done in your life as you can. That's what it's all about. So, you know, the guy who wins, the guy who records 1,000 songs in a lifetime, that's the guy who wins. He was successful. That's real success, man.
Yeah, I think that the whole success thing is very relative to what your goals are, because at the end of the day, you're the one that's living your life. You can't have someone come up to you on the internet that you don't even know saying, oh, well, yeah, sure, he's recorded 20 albums, but he's never gotten that number one or that statue.
Most bands don't. Way more than don't than ever do. And usually bands that do it once and live off it for the rest of their lives. Whether you want it that way or not, the world, that's what they do to you. The world does that to every band. They pick a song and you're fucked. That's what it is, whether you liked it or not.
Right.
You know, we put out the Metal on Metal album. Then the song Metal on Metal, to me, at that particular time, was the weakest song on that album.
Right.
I'm going, it's got the least integrity. You know, it's got a short guitar solo. It's got, you know, mid-range singing. There's no real melody going on. You know, there's all these things that I felt as a musician that it fell short of the other songs. Not in comparison. It's not, to me, it was not as in integrity, didn't have the integrity that the other songs did, but it's our song forever, whether we like it or not. You know what I'm saying? And you know, you could say, oh geez, you know, why didn't they pick it doesn't matter what they pick, so long as they pick something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Okay, but having said that, I have not, absolutely not, gone and written 20 Metal on Metals.
Right.
There's one. That's it. You know, that's the way it works. Or at least that's the way it works for me. I try not to write the same song twice. And sometimes I do it. I do try to write the same song twice in a certain sense to capture the same feelings, but they're still not the same song.
Right. I get what you're saying. It's the same as taking a picture. You know, when you take a picture, you may take a snapshot of a specific moment, but you take it from a different angle. It's not the same picture. It's right. Influenced by the same thing, but it's giving you something different.
That's right. That is comparable. And it's sort of like if you think about Van Gogh and his paintings of the flowers in the flower vase, there's about, I think there's almost a dozen of them.
Okay.
And they're all over the world. And everybody who looks at them thinks they're looking at the same painting. But as soon as you see them up against each other, they're vastly different.
Yeah.
Each one's got its own thing, but yet they're all similar, but all unique.
Right.
Okay, so it's really much the same thing. But then again, you know, Van Gogh is another example of anvilism in a certain sense. The guy didn't sell a paint, sold one painting his whole entire life. And now his paintings are, you can't even put a price tag on it. It's worth so much. You know what I mean? But meanwhile, in his day and age, and he died a poor man. So, you know, more of injustice in the arts. Just typical. Common and typical. You know, you don't know what you got till it's gone. All the cliche stuff that they say about it, you know. It's true. There's no bitterness. I'm not have no bitterness. I am completely content and happy and proud of everything that I've ever done. So it's all good, man, at this point.
The other thing that I wanted to bring up about the documentary is we've seen documentaries forever, but it seemed like your documentary was kind of lightning striking because it kind of set off a wave of a new generation or a new era of documentaries. And I mean, I would take it a step further and say that your documentary probably fueled stuff like the Queen biopic and the Elton John biopic and stuff like that. Do you feel that your movie had that type of influence?
It's no different than my fucking music, dude.
Okay.
How do you think it looked to Rob and I to watch in 1983 the whole world pick up on what we did and leave us behind? Okay, we were doing it before there wasn't even metal, didn't exist in North America. We didn't call it metal. We were doing something that they were doing in England, and we were one of the very first metal bands to play in America. Yeah, you got hard rock, but there's a difference between hard rock and metal, because hard rock was still attached to rock and roll. It still used rock and roll progressions. Metal used more of a prog attitude. You had songs that were much more complicated than just rock and roll. Certainly the Iron Maiden's the Phantom of the Opera and songs like that, or Anvil Mothra. It's not rock and roll. It's a form of it, but it's metal. That turned it into metal. What we call metal. It's taking riff rock. See, that's what it is, and you can put titles on it, but you could also talk about it in musicality, what things were actually doing, you know. So that's how I kind of see it. So there was a difference, and some of the problems that I've been faced with is that I'm kind of the bridge between hard rock and heavy metal, because I was one of the pioneering bands that created that bridge. So I had songs. I still have songs that venture back into the rock and roll world, but at the same time, there are songs that are not rock and roll.
Right.
Okay, and you can hear that. Obviously, Dead Man's Shoes, or actually, that's not even a good example. Probably more like Blind Rage that's not really rock and roll. You know, that's full on metal. That's what where you're not using completely different genre in the riff, you know, just in the riffs itself. But that's, you know, I mean, we can sit and discuss how hard rock became metal, and, you know, it's, you know, certainly Black Sabbath and Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin were the forerunners of all of it, really, because that's when the biggest influence for after Hendrix, you know, the use of distorted guitars and stuff, and what and all of a sudden everybody's doing it. You know, nothing stays sacred, but everything is stolen by the next generation and regurgitated in a new fashion. And that's what's been going on in the music industry for decades now. But I think we might have gone the full circle. You know, I don't know that you can't go any, you certainly can't go much further with guitar. Yeah, guitar has done its thing, man. It's done. That's part of where the downslide for the interest in it went. Once you got to the point where the guitar playing is so phenomenal that everybody starts sounding the same, you can't tell one guitar player from the next. It's done. It's over. The race is finished. You know what I mean? For many, many years in hard rock and metal, especially, it was who had the best guitar player in their band. Everything was revolved around the lead guitar. I mean, otherwise, what would Van Halen mean without Eddie Van Halen?
Right. Exactly.
It's centered around the guitar, which we all know. Obviously, we all know that, but we're at a point in history that they've done everything. Every possible way of playing lead guitar has been done. So what do you do? What is there left to do? Write good songs. That's all that's left. It's not about the guitar solo anymore. It's about the frickin' song. The riffs last forever. The solos are here temporarily. It's the way it is, man.
Yeah, I think that gets lost on a lot of, I don't want to say newer bands because I sound like an old fart saying that, but I think with the advent of technology and people being able to record anything they want from home and being able to perfect a lot of things, as you're saying, it's almost like a space race. Well, we were able to go the fastest. We were able to play the most amount of notes, the most amount of this, most amount of that. But at the end of the day, what's the most memorable and what's going to speak to you really? What's actually going to entertain you? Okay, cool. We got past the Olympic event, but what's going to
Where's the entertainment value? Where's the fulfillment of what we love as human beings, which is melody?
Yeah.
No melody, no music.
Yeah, I agree.
When you put too many notes, you lose the melody. You know, when you play too fast, you can't use melody. That's why all the death metal that's playing a million miles an hour has got some guy screaming like the Cookie Monster. You know, if you start thinking about what it is and what it is that, but it is about melody. If you haven't got a melody, it's really not music. Technically speaking, it's not.
Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely something that's always attracted me to bands. And even if they have gone with some of that more Cookie Monster sound, if they're able to pull in some sort of melody to their songs, that's always kind of opened the door for me.
Usually what these bands do, they've got, of course, the death metal vocals, but what they do to offset that there's no melody is they'll put melody in with the guitars.
Yeah.
And it's usually a slower melody line that they'll add it someplace in the song. And now the song has a shape and form, because without that, there it's just fucking noise. Sorry. Yeah. You got a bunch of and every song is, how are you going to discern? Okay, this is the real truth about humans and ears. Okay, years ago I did an experiment, and I'm not, this is no joke, I used a 4-track tape recorder, and I went and I recorded on each track different sounds in around the house. Keys dropping, a glass breaking, just various sounds of all types, and just filled 4 minutes of tape on 4 tracks. And it's just filled with all different things. You know, it's in stereo and it's being panned. All of a sudden, there's a glass smashing here. You listen to it 10 times, and even before the glass smashes, you're going, here comes the glass smashing. You're memorizing the fucking noise.
That's interesting.
Oh, that, what does that say? It says that we basically we can memorize noise and it turns into music. That's how we recognize it as music. That's what it is. And that's why you can get away with playing a billion miles an hour with no melody. You listen to it enough and it becomes music, because you memorize all the bumps and scratches and everything that, I mean, if you think about it, okay, Johnny Z, you know, the great Johnny Z, right?
Yeah.
He bought the Metal on Metal album way back, had a first pressing, and it had a skip in Mothra. You know, he talked about that skip till the day he died.
That's amazing, because there's so many things that as a kid that I had that you ended up getting scratches in your vinyl albums, and you listen
to years later when you're listening to it on CD, you're expecting to hear that scratch or pop or hear it skip. I know, man.
Exactly. So you saying that actually made the hair stand up on my arms, because I've experienced that so many times where you're like, okay, here it comes, the beginning of Ozzy Osbourne's tribute, where it's the opera lead up. I forget the name of the song, but anyway, it skips on my vinyl right into the beginning of I Don't Know. So it's when I hear it back, it's like, oh, here comes the skip. Oh, no, it's the CD version. So we don't have the skip anymore. I hear the whole intro. It's so great. Yeah.
They changed the song.
There you go. That's great.
But that's how our brain works. That's why what we're talking about works. That's why, and you can get away with a lot of garbage, man. People memorize a lot of garbage.
Yeah. Makes sense. It makes sense when you put it together like that. It completely makes sense. We've talked about a lot of things. We haven't really talked about One and Only.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Yeah. So you've worked with Martin and Ukon for the last few albums.
Yeah.
Why does it make sense for you guys to continue to work with them? What do they add?
They do an amazing job at getting the best performances, mixing. Listen to the sound of those albums. You're not going to do much better than that. You got it's German technology done by Germans. It's like, and they're metal fanatics. No one knows that music better than those people. No one. It's a culture in that country. It's not just a passing fancy. This has been something that's been going on for decades, right? So. And they're generations of these people. It's not just one age group. It's like across the whole fucking thing, man. It's like, wow, you got children to elderly adults listening to metal. It's way, way, way much more ingrained in Germany than it is in North America. It's not even comparable. You know, why would I go to record in Canada when you've got maybe a handful of guys that are even into the music, that are any good at being engineers and working in studios? So where are you going to, you got to get to know who they are, and then and who knows what kind of price is it? How much is that going to cost to find somebody with the same level of expertise that I'm using in Germany? Good luck. I don't know anybody. Like, I don't. And they haven't introduced themselves to me either. So, until that happens, you know, or until I hear about something, why would I change? There's no point. So why do I keep going? Well, you keep going because they're raising it. The bar keeps getting raised every time. We take the last album and bring it to the next level. What can we do to make it better? And working with the same people, the same team, the familiarity between your personalities, it opens a deeper communication. And with deeper communication, you can get even more exacting work done. You know, whereas the person might be, you know, where Martin might be originally was slightly intimidated to tell me to sing something again. Now he doesn't think twice about it, right? It's like, Libs, just fucking sing it again. Like, sure, Martin, no problem, man. You know what I mean? And it becomes your friend. You're all friends. You've known each other. You can tell by each other's expression on your face. You don't even have to use words.
Right.
They're becoming like band members. You know, and I think it's a great working bunch of guys, including within the band. You know that each of the guys in the band have the trust in these engineers and producers that when someone tells Chris to replay or give me a different kind of bass line, he doesn't get angry. You know what I mean? And you got somebody that you trust is saying that. There's a reason they're saying it, and eventually you have you gain the trust from experiencing it, working with them, that they've been right, so they're probably right again.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that and that's those kind of things are, you know. Why did Rush do all those albums with Terry Brown? I guess the same reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you get lucky and you find the right guy, and it's great. The right guys. I mean, we're very, very, very. I feel very fortunate, and I have a lot of gratitude towards Martin and Jorg. They're phenomenal, phenomenal guys, man. You know, when I can't see something and they tell me, I listen because they're always right. And it's like, ooh, you know, like in picking the song, the lead song for the new album, as an example, I think Feed Your Fantasy would have been the last song I would have chosen. But they insisted that it was the most groundbreaking for the band, and stepping a little bit to the left or the right of what people will expect.
Right.
And they were saying that that's going to be a better stepping stone and a better start, because you've been doing a lot of, you know, you guys have been very consistent, and you can say the same, but it's a consistency of heaviness, consistency of types of feels and what people grow to expect. And when you give, here's something new, and that's what we're saying, you needed something new. This is new for you guys. This is new. It might not be new to the world, but it's new for you guys. And you know what? You could use it.
Right.
So people go, what? That's Anvil? Perfect. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Because it's only one song on the album. The rest of the album is all different. So what the hell? And then I stopped and thought about it. I'm going, yeah. And Metal on Metal is the same thing on that album. It's the only song, the only song that was like that on that record. And in fact, the only song that's ever been like that on any of our records. So it was one of those and the one that I least expected to do anything. To me, it was, you know, we talked about this at the beginning. So no new revelation, no new surprise. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when Jorg and they're going, it's obvious. You can't hear it. What is the matter with you, Lips? Come on. It's different. You need this. Okay. I'll go with it. What the hell? And it's actually made quite an impression in a sense, because of course the people that had the expectations of hearing, you know, a million miles an hour and the typical anvil, me screaming my head off, all of a sudden it's not a song like that. And they're going, oh no.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's a fucking bubblegum song, man. Okay. It turned into bubblegum. It's just not speed metal. Okay. So either was metal on metal. Hello.
Yeah. I think that's so important to have that trust and communication with someone that you see a lot of bands that self-produce things. And although a lot of bands think that they know what's best for them, sometimes you need that kick in the ass from the outside.
You all think, all these bands think that they got Tom Scholz in the band and they're going to produce themselves. It's like, get the fuck out of here. That's a one in a million guy. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it, man. First of all, think about what Tom was. He was a guitar player who owned his own fucking studio. Okay. He's there every day working in that studio. He knows how to do it. He knows what he's doing. If you're just a musician and you're going into a studio once a year, if you're lucky, you're going in once a year. What are you doing? Think about it. How much do you really know about what's going on in a studio and how to use it properly? And you can't listen. You can't listen and play at the same time. How do you be in a control room and know when you got a good bed track? You got to go. And the going back and forth. Listen, man, I did enough records with an engineer and producing ourselves. I did enough of it. And, you know, everybody in the band becomes a musician and their opinion means more than the next guy. And it's the mixes sound like a battle rather than a real mix. Everybody's battling to be heard. And sometimes it's ridiculous, because sometimes when something's really soft in a mix, it stands out more than when it's loud.
Right.
Okay. These are the things that an engineer and a professional who works in a studio all the time knows the difference. Most musicians do not. They're deluding themselves into believing that they do, that, you know, you're one or two times into the studio, you're going to do your first and second album. Now you're a big shot. You're not a big shot. I've been in the fucking studio 20 times and I would never undertake being a knob twiddler. I ain't going to do it. I don't even want to know. Where does that plug in? I don't care. I'm a musician. That's what I want to be.
Right.
Let somebody else worry about it. And I'm going to make sure that whoever is worrying about it is the best guy that I can find. And I'm gonna make sure that he has a set of ears on him that he can tell when I've hit a sour note or when I hit the right note and whether it's got the right attitude. I want somebody who can tell the difference between that, not just whether it's the right note or wrong note or whether it's in time. What's the attitude? Is it the right take? Is it the right character in the voice? Is it that's what a producer does.
Yeah, very important.
So think about it. You're singing a song and everything. When you listen to yourself sing, you hear yourself sing. You don't really hear the performance in context with the music. You don't. Because you're focusing, did I sing all the notes right? Did I sing? That's why you can't produce it. You can't listen and perform at the same time.
Yeah.
They're two different angles. It's like being able to see yourself see yourself in the mirror to versus seeing yourself in person. Like,
right.
Like everybody else sees you. See, that's the thing. Even when we see ourselves, we never see ourselves like everybody else does until we watch ourselves on a video.
Right.
And then you're going, fuck, my mole is on the wrong side of my face. Right.
Right. Oh yeah.
But if you didn't have a producer, you'd never know it. Or if you never saw it on film, you'd never know it.
Yeah.
And that's what having a producer, it's like having somebody who's giving your reflection back properly from your perspective rather than a mirror perspective. It's really kind of fascinating. So you're asking about how important producers is. You can't even begin to start tallying up the things that become important and contingent on whether you've got a good producer or not.
Where can people go to pick up One and Only and ensure that the most amount of money gets back into your pockets?
Well, in this day and age, find someplace to buy the album.
Okay.
Amazon usually works.
Okay, perfect.
I mean, that's what everybody does these days. I mean, it's not, yeah. I guess record stores have, I guess if you can find a record store.
Yeah. Okay.
Where are you going to find it? Look on the internet. That's where everybody does, right? I don't know. If I had to find it, where would I find it? I guess I'd Google Anvil One and Only, and it would probably tell you where to buy it.
And is there any specific place you want people to go to keep up with the band?
Well, I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, it's definitely a worthy watch.
Okay.
It's not a movie about heavy metal. if that's what you're thinking, that's really not what it is, and that's what you'll probably really love about it if you actually watch it. It's a movie about perseverance and doing what you love and getting away with it. That's really what it's about, which is pretty much a human story, you know. So if you can find that, it's definitely a worthy watch. There's 20 Anvil albums out there. Buy one. You know, buy one. I can't, and I'm not going to tell you which one. You know what I mean? That's up to you. pick the cover you like the most and buy it. And you're going to have a generally good example of what Anvil is, no matter what you bought.
Okay.
And every album has its own time and place. So it's just a slightly different spin every time. They're all Anvil. I mean, you can find that same, you could say the same thing about AC/DC or Motorhead or any of the other bands that came from the 80s. That's what we do. We are what we are and we do what we do. That's it. Hi, everybody. You are watching Lips from the band Anvil on Signals from Mars.
Awesome. I appreciate your time. It was a lot of fun chatting with you. Nothing but success for you, sir. Within the success that you're looking for. I hope that you guys continue to
get the success that they're looking for.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly.
If looking for that ultimate success. Good luck. Knock yourself out. There
you go. Okay, sir. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Yeah. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Awesome. There was my interview with Lips. Lots of fun to talk to him. Was allotted 45 minutes. Was shooting for 20 to 30. I was able to ask. I had 16 points here. I think I asked 7, 8. Interesting guy. Was a really cool chat. Hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed speaking to him. And on that note, we'll end this episode of Signals from Mars. This is coming out on June 28th, which is when One and Only by Anvil will be coming out on the 29th, the Saturday after this episode airs. They will be at Hellfest, which is a huge festival in Clisson, France. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. At least I'm doing a stupid French accent. Anyway, thank you guys for checking this episode out, and we'll see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.